I'm Montse Alvarado. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, making progress. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says the senior leader of Hamas is dead after a recent airstrike. We have reaction from the White House. Lending a hand. Find out what Pope Leo had to say about compassion during his weekly general audience.
I don't see how you say it's because they're white that they're being attacked. Most of the time it's because they've got possessions that these, it's criminals that are doing it.
EWTN's Colin Flynn sits down with a South African cardinal to discuss recent events, including the country's leader visiting the Oval Office. And...
why do you come here every day? You should be out enjoying yourself.
Why do you come here every day?
You could work anywhere, right?
We speak with the star of one of the hit series available right here on EWTN. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the feast day of St. Bernard of Menthon. We begin tonight with the Pope's plea as a grim milestone is marked. 600 days ago, Hamas launched its brutal attack on Israel, killing more than 1,000 people. Of the 251 hostages taken, 58 are still being held captive and only 20 presumed still alive. Since then, Israel's retaliatory assaults have been constant and unrelenting. Tens of thousands of Palestinians have died, and the humanitarian situation is dire. Today, Pope Leo XIV issued this appeal.
From the Gaza Strip, the cries of mothers and fathers grow ever louder as they hold the lifeless bodies of their children close. Forced to move continuously in search of some food and safer shelter from the bombings. I renew my appeal to those responsible. Cease fire. Let all hostages be freed, and let humanitarian law be fully respected.
The White House says it could share a new Middle East ceasefire proposal as early as today. And President Donald Trump reveals a call he made to avoid a conflict with Iran. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen?
Monse, President Donald Trump wants more time to get a nuclear deal done with Iran. And he asked Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu not to strike Iran in the meantime.
Yeah, I told him this would be inappropriate to do right now because we're very close to a solution. I think they want to make a deal, and if we can make a deal, save a lot of lives.
President Donald Trump also provided an update on the Israel-Hamas war.
We're dealing with the whole situation in Gaza. We're getting food to the people of Gaza. It's been a very nasty situation, very nasty fight.
The president's chief negotiator says the terms of a new ceasefire deal could be delivered later today.
And I have some very good feelings about getting to a long-term resolution, temporary ceasefire, and a long-term resolution, a peaceful resolution of that conflict.
This comes as Israel confirms an airstrike killed senior Hamas leader Mohammed Sinwar. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says since the war started 600 days ago, Israel has decimated Hamas's leadership.
We eliminated tens of thousands of terrorists. We eliminated Def, Haniyeh, Yenyeh Sinwar, and Mohammed Sinwar.
Israel has vowed to seize control of Gaza and fight until Hamas is destroyed and the hostages returned. In Tel Aviv, families of hostages and activist groups marked Day 600, and this former hostage says he was starved, eating only one biscuit per day.
It was a very difficult time for me there, but at the same time, my faith in God became very strong.
Palestinians, too, have become increasingly desperate for food. At least one Palestinian was reportedly killed and dozens wounded when gunshots were fired on a crowd that overran a new aid distribution site. And today at the United Nations, one trauma surgeon from California addressed the UN Security Council.
I did not see or treat a single combatant during my 5 weeks in Gaza. My patients were six-year-olds with shrapnels in their heart and bullets in their brains, and pregnant women whose pelvises had been obliterated.
Also tonight, the UN's Atomic Watchdog Group says the jury is still out regarding negotiations between the U.S. and Iran over its nuclear program, but adds the continuing negotiations are a good sign. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
For more on the situation in Gaza that Owen was just talking about, I want to bring in Fabrizio Carboni. He's the former head of the Mideast region at the International Committee of the Red Cross. How would you describe the situation in Gaza right now?
I think it's desperate. It's weeks, months that the situation is desperate. We had a ceasefire a couple of weeks ago, months ago, and we could see how much humanitarian assistance could make a difference for Palestinian people. And today, as humanitarian actor, we're desperate for a new ceasefire. We're desperate for more humanitarian assistance coming into Gaza, and even more desperate for an end to this crisis.
Well, I think everyone is praying for an end to the crisis. It's been a little over a year, though, since the ICRC opened its field hospital in Rafah. How are people coping? What are they telling you?
Look, you know, words are sometimes limited to describe what people are going through. It's about death. It's about having no future. It's about children being orphans because all their family were killed. It's no school, no water. In one word, it's no hope. And we all know that the absence of hope, it's the most cruel situation for any person. And I include in this situation also the hostages and their families. It's, I believe, a collective tragedy.
Is there anything that you can say about the situation of the hostages? We know there are over 50 whose lives, we don't know if they remain alive or not.
Unfortunately, very soon the situation of the hostages were not a humanitarian situation. They became, unfortunately, a political and military issue. And so it's impossible for us to comment on their situation. The only thing we expect, we demand, it's their unconditional release. And with this also a flow of humanitarian assistance which matched the needs, the desperate needs of the Palestinian population.
Now, Fabrizio, by now, many people have seen the pictures of hungry Palestinians rushing a food distribution site. How do you manage a situation like that where bullets are flying?
We don't manage. That's the brutal reality. We had in our hospital, stray bullet wounding some patients, scaring the whole staff. And this is just representative of what the whole humanitarian community and, more importantly, the Palestinian population is living every day. So a ceasefire is needed, truce is needed, a political solution is needed. And if I have to quote the word of the Pope, it's compassion.
Absolutely. Well, we certainly heard about that today from him. Thank you so much, Fabrizio.
Thank you for having me.
Meanwhile, Ukrainian leader Volodymyr Zelensky is in Germany, where the country's chancellor pledged to help Ukraine develop long-range missile systems. The weapons would be free of imposed limitations on their use and targets in the fight against Russia. After the United States, Germany has been the biggest supplier of military aid to Ukraine. Hours after the pledge, Russia's foreign minister publicly invited Ukraine to hold direct peace talks in Istanbul on June 2nd. House Republicans and Speaker Mike Johnson scored a major victory for President Trump last week. They passed a massive measure that cuts government spending and extends tax breaks. But some Senate Republicans are not on board. They say the one big beautiful bill actually increases the deficit. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has that story. Eric, good to see you.
Hey, good to see you too, Monse. The mood in the Senate isn't exactly upbeat about this bill in its present form. In fact, a number of Republican senators claim that it needs a major rewrite and say that the bill can't be passed without big changes. They're demanding more than $1.5 trillion in spending cuts passed by the House to reduce the deficit. One of the major outspoken senators is Senator Rand Paul. He calls the House bill unrealistic and unserious.
The cuts currently in the bill are wimpy and anemic, but I still would support the bill, even with wimpy and anemic cuts, if they weren't going to explode the debt. The problem is the math doesn't add up. They're going to explode the debt by, the House says $4 trillion. The Senate's actually been talking about exploding the debt $5 trillion.
And Senator Ron Johnson blames a rushed process.
We haven't taken the time. We've done the same OA exempt most programs. Take a look at a couple, tweak them a little bit, try and rely on a CBO score, and then have that score completely out of context with anything that, really we ought to be talking about, like the $22 trillion of additional deficit over the next 10 years.
President Trump says he supports the bill, but Senate Republicans should make whatever changes they want.
We will be negotiating that bill, and I'm not happy about certain aspects of it, but I'm thrilled by other aspects of it. That's the way they go. It's very big. It's the big, beautiful bill. But the beautiful is because of all of the things we have.
Right now, the bill takes nearly $300 billion away from the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, also known as SNAP. It provides basic food assistance for more than 40 million people.
These cuts won't make things more efficient. They will not solve any problems. They just take food away from people who need it most. Investing in nutrition assistance, investing in SNAP, that's an investment in people.
Even the president's advisor, Elon Musk, whose Doge team claims it identified billions in savings, isn't happy with the House bill.
I was like disappointed to see the massive spending bill, frankly, which increases the budget deficit, not just decrease it, and undermines the work that the Doge team is doing.
But Speaker Johnson has a message for the Senate. Make the fewest modifications possible.
We've got to pass it one more time to ratify their changes in the House. And I have a very delicate balance here, a very delicate equilibrium that we've reached over a long period of time. And it's best not to meddle with it too much.
There are a number of other flashpoints for the Senate, including Medicaid cuts and green energy tax credits. Work begins next week when committees begin marking up the bill. Speaker Johnson and Senate Republican leaders want the bill to the president's desk by July 4th. Now, some Republicans tell me that it's likely that they won't finish work on the final bill until the end of July, before the August recess. Monse, back to you in the studio.
Thanks so much, Eric. Well, Republican Senator Tommy Tuberville announced he will not seek a re-election bid for Senate. Instead, he plans to make a 2026 run for governor of Alabama. The senator made his announcement on The Will Cain Show.
I will announce that I will be the future governor of the great state of Alabama.
There we go.
Now, it's... I've still got 18 months to go with President Trump to make America great again. We got a lot of work to do.
The move by the former longtime college football coach, who spent 10 years as head coach at Auburn University in Alabama, ends weeks of speculation. Tuberville is seen as a front runner in the race to succeed term-limited GOP Governor Kay Ivey in the heavily red southern state. We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, including a question of humanity. The Holy Father explains why he places so much importance on showing empathy to others. Last week, President Trump confronted South Africa's president with false claims of white genocide. After the break, the country's cardinal responds to those remarks.
If murder of 50 farmers in a year is genocide, then we've got genocides all over the world.
Leo XIV reminds the faithful that compassion is not only a religious issue.
La grazia di avere sempre di più i suoi stessi sentimenti.
During his weekly talk to pilgrims at the Vatican, the Holy Father says that everyone is called to be compassionate. He warns against letting our busy lives prevent us from feeling compassion for others. And the best way to show empathy is through concrete actions rather than staying at a safe distance. The Holy Father also recently praised the work being done by the official missionary group of the Catholic Church. Pope Leo said the Pontifical Mission Societies are helping proclaim the name of Jesus with joy, trust, and courage. One attendee said the message was well received.
I was very touched by him. Yeah, he's totally different. His speeches are well prepared and short, but they are straight. He's straightly saying what he wants from us. He gave theological theory, but also concrete things that we national directors should do. For instance, we should go personally to the parishes and inform the people and about the mission. And I was very touched by him. Yeah, And when I met him, I was really nervous. I've been with so many popes, but this time I was really nervous because I gave him a big book, yeah, with prayers and wishes. More thousands of people have written it, and we made a book out of it. And I gave it to him, and I wanted to have a photo with him, yeah, to show the Austrians that I really brought it to the new pope, yeah. And then I was so nervous. And when I see the photos now, he was smiling, smiling, smiling.
One of the largest donation organizations in Austria recently launched a website collecting prayers for the new pope. Thousands of people have sent congratulations and prayers. Father Wallner collected everything into a book and presented it to Pope Leo. The United States has new warnings about traveling to South Africa. It alerts U.S. tourists about the threat of terrorism and is tightening restrictions on official travel. The news comes after a tense meeting in the Oval Office last week. President Trump confronted his South African counterpart over widely discredited claims about genocide being committed against white people. EWTN's foreign correspondent Colm Flynn recently sat down with a church leader from South Africa to talk about that meeting and much more.
I think the biggest challenge really is that the structures of apartheid that were put into place cannot be reversed. The people in the very deprived areas are always going to be blacks. You're not going to find too many whites, coloureds or Indians in that group, but it'll always be blacks. The others in the more wealthiest areas, you can have a mixture of all the races there.
I know it's a complicated question and we would need a long time to answer it, but what are some of the obstacles to breaking down that vast inequality?
I've reflected on that quite a lot recently. And even though you might say the segregated racially segregated areas, the group areas as it was called in the past, that legislation is gone. But removing legislation doesn't remove the reality. Mm. So you're still always going to get black people in a certain area, and that's where you have your centers of crime, your sources of crime, and that spreads all over the place. There's one thing we do have in common. Crime has no barriers. Mm. And the richest areas, medium areas, and the poorest areas are all going to be dominated by crime and are being dominated by crime. It's a very serious problem. I think we're really worried about that.
The crime is still out of control? Would you say it's out of control? Or?
I think even the police are admitting that. They just haven't got the resources to do it. Yeah.
South Africa has been in the news recently, as you've seen, especially now with the very contentious meeting in the Oval Office at the White House between the United States president and the president of South Africa, where Donald Trump displayed on the television screen and he held up articles claiming that there was a white genocide happening in South Africa, and then your president disputed these allegations, refuted them. You know, the church is there on the ground in all of the parishes. What is happening? What's the situation in South Africa in terms of that?
I have seen since then, Colm, I've seen a number of people doing analysis. How many white farmers have actually been murdered in the last year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever it is? And if murder of 50 farmers in a year is genocide, then we've got genocides all over the world. But if you're taking genocide to be specific, a particular race group or a particular strain of that race group is being targeted for elimination, then I don't see how you say it's because they're white that they're being attacked. Most of the time it's because they've got possessions that these... it's criminals that are doing it.
Yeah.
It's not like there's a political party or an organized group that's doing this here for political reasons. It's mainly criminal that's behind... Crime is behind the whole scene.
as someone who's not from South Africa and doesn't know too much about the politics of South Africa, but seeing as well those videos of that member of parliament, was it standing up and saying to the crowds before his rally, we need a revolution, but we have to kill in a revolution. It must be a bloody revolution. Yeah. And the crowds chanting and roaring. Does someone like that have a lot of followers in South Africa?
Unfortunately, as the situation, the social situation deteriorates, and it has been deteriorating since 1994. For a while, we were in a period of real hopefulness. And I think for a good while, under Nelson Mandela, we certainly were pushing forward with that. Thabo Mbeki continued the process. But when he was eliminated and Jacob Zuma came in, I think the wheels literally came off the wagon. Yeah.
Now, it's a great privilege to meet you today and to talk to you because you are a man who has served under four popes.
Yes.
Yeah. Pope John Paul II, Pope Benedict XVI, Pope Francis, and now our new Pope, Pope Leo XIV.
Yeah.
What was your reaction when you saw him come to the balcony after the white smoke came from the Sistine Chapel?
Well, I must be honest. I didn't catch the surname when it was being announced.
You said, who is that?
Who's this Robertum? You know, and I'm thinking, Robertum, I know.
You're going to the Rolodex.
I thought a number of Roberts. I said, can't be that one, can't be that one. Until this is where AI, we might condemn it.
Prevost.
But within,
did you go to ChatGTP?
I just went onto a thing and I said, Leo the 14th. Prevost came out straight away.
Mm.
This was within minutes.
Yes.
I said, my goodness, is that who it is? Then I started remembering. I started saying, well, they've really hit on a good one, because they've gone for a missionary.
They've gone for a missionary. Yeah. Well, Cardinal Napier, it's been a pleasure talking to you. We could talk for so long about all the issues in South Africa. Yeah. It's fascinating, but I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Colin. It was really a great talking to you. Thank you very much indeed.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, a hit show returns for season two. As EWTN's James the Less is about to return, we speak to the lead actor about his experience in the role and what we can expect this season. Plus, how an ordinary interview with two nuns became an extraordinary online sensation. Just a few days, one of EWTN's hit series returns for a second season.
James, I have a sick call. I need to sit in the church a bit.
That doesn't sound like custodial work.
No, that's confession. This is adoration. I'm on the schedule till 4, so please, stay watch with the Lord until the next person arrives.
I don't believe in the Lord.
That's okay. He believes in you.
James the Less tells the story of James Little, an atheist who can't find a job, so he works as a handyman at a church named St. James the Less. And as you might imagine, his work at the church doesn't leave him unchanged. Joining us now is James Little himself, Tanner Kalina. Tanner, thank you so much for being with us. First, tell us a bit about your experience on the show. What has it been like playing James Little?
Hey, Monse. Thank you for having me. Always great seeing you.
Yes.
So when I was originally cast to play James Little, I was a focused missionary at the University of Colorado in Boulder working with college students. And so I tried embodying them for my role in James Little and seeing the faith afresh in their eyes as someone new just stumbling into a church would. And so it's just been a great time being on set and really kind of trying to play someone who's looking at all things Catholic for the first time. It's really fun.
It sounds like it's an incredible experience, but also one of great spiritual growth. What kind of change do we see in James in season two without giving too much away?
Yes, yes. Well, we left off with a big cliffhanger on season one. And, you know, we get to see a little bit more of his heart opening. Season one ended with him going up to our Eucharistic Lord and asking, is there anyone there? And so we get to see a little bit more of his exploration in the faith and a little bit more of that curiosity come out and a little bit more of that conversion of heart.
What are you most excited about then in this season? Where do you think the audience is going to go in this journey for season two?
You know, this is just good old clean fun. You know, it's got love, it's got the faith, it's got redemption. I'm excited for people to just sit back and have a good time watching this goon walk into a church and fall in love with the Lord and fall in love with a beautiful woman as well.
Well, that's a nice thing to see, especially on TV. But what spiritual growth then have you experienced coming from a focused missionary now going into a lot of acting and entertainment? I know you and I had some great interactions at the National Eucharistic Congress last year. You've done a lot of podcasting. How has your faith grown over this time period?
Oh, just tremendously. The Lord is super good. So I became a focused missionary by leaving my acting career behind in Hollywood. And I still had these desires in me to share the faith through media, through storytelling. And I just trusted that the Lord would bring those about some way. He's way more creative than I am. And so when James the Less came into my lap, it felt like God was just giving me something to enjoy. It felt like he was saying, I see you, I care about you, I know your desires. And so I feel like he's just been drawing me even closer to him throughout this whole process and throughout everything else. We have a good God.
Yes, we do. When you think about evangelization, bringing people to Christ, what special role do you think this series plays in introducing the faith to an audience that otherwise may not know it?
Well, it's made with excellence. You know, we're using great equipment. We have great writing. The writers just killed it. The whole producing team, everyone behind the scenes did an absolute amazing job. And then my fellow actors did just a tremendous job. So this is a series made with excellence that, like I said, is good, clean, fun, promotes the faith. And so I think anyone who stumbles into it, who's maybe on the margins of Catholicism or maybe on the outside, will really be blown away by what we're bringing to the table here.
Absolutely. Well, on the outside or on the inside, I know it's one of my favorite things to watch, and it's easy and accessible because it's online. So I love watching you, and I'm so glad to see season two. We waited a long time for this, and we're delayed because of the Pope's passing. So God bless Pope Leo that he's with us so that we can all now watch James the Less season two. Thank you so much, Tanner.
Yeah, praise God. Thank you.
Well, finally, tonight, two Brazilian nuns have gone viral after an appearance on a Catholic TV show. A conversation about a vocational retreat very quickly turned into a dance party. The duo surprised the audience with the performance, complete with singing, beatboxing, and dance moves. The sisters are dedicated to young people who are struggling with drug addiction, and they say music has been a powerful tool to help those in need. Can I get an amen? We thank you so much for watching tonight and being with us. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Montse Alvarado. Good night, and God bless you.